In fact, what's fascinating is the Iranian public has not wanted to do things like nuclear weapons following the Shah's, following the Ayatollah's fatwa. But you'll find if, when they've done that survey of Shia in Lebanon or Shia in Iraq or Shia in Bahrain or Shia in Pakistan, what you find is they say, no, Iran should develop nuclear weapons. We think it would be an important deterrence to protect the Shia around the world. So I suspect that's where the Shia now in Iran is trending after the war. But that gives you an idea of just how sympathetic and supportive the Shia is. This is their protectorate. It's not the dispensationalist nonsense version of it that you get from some people on the evangelical right in the U.S., where they pretend it's Iran that has this aggressive, prophetic, want to end the world for their religion viewpoint. That's not Iran at all, if you study what the Ayatollah...
They're religious Nazis, Lindsey Graham said while he was alive. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, it's like, they're not the ones doing this. It's if you go to certain Christian Zionist churches in the United States is where you hear that nonsense. Listen to Huckabee, and that's where you hear the nonsense. We're going to bring in the rapture, brother. We're going to bring it in again. And people should really study what a lot of that Christian Zionist stuff means. It means all the Jews die, just FYI. So if anybody thinks the Israelis are truly Zionist, or Christian Zionist, that is, then ask yourself, have they figured out what the dispensationalist prophetic ending is for them? It's you need to die so Jesus can come back. Would you help facilitate that? I mean, it's insanity on steroids.
That's the movement that's dangerous. For someone who does follow Christianity, real Christianity, that is not what it teaches. I mean, just be crystal clear on that. Okay, so if that whole thing that we used at the start of this war is to say, oh, we're going to go and help them overthrow their government, if that was always nonsense, then what we're doing now, what we're seeing with these tens of millions of people that came out and knew that they were risking their lives because they knew that by gathering they could become targets, et cetera, but they didn't care. They just went on. We had Ahmad Soleiman, who contacted me shortly after. He was there during a lot of these, during all the funeral, actually. And he said that there was one common theme he saw everybody talk to, which is that if they had to sacrifice half of their population, you know, like 40 million people, in order to defeat the United States and Israel, they said that would be a price worth paying. They don't want to, obviously, but they said that they are so adamant on never giving in to anything. So that tells me, and the physical evidence that we have and the military stuff, which you've already mentioned, is that there's no path, zero path, that any military force, any military attrition from the United States would ever harm Iran enough that would make them say, all right, fine, we'll do whatever you want to do. I don't see that is even being a theoretical possibility. Do you?
Oh, agreed. I mean, I told people at the very beginning of this, if you understood Shia sacrifice, Persian pride, and Iranian nationalism, you would know this is never going to work, that we can never conquer or never get them to capitulate. It's like a Russian once told me, we'd rather eat dirt than give up our pride. And Persian pride runs somehow even deeper. I mean, these are people who converted the Mongols. Mongols came in, technically conquered the Persians, and within a generation, they've all become Persians. They did that to the Mongols. I mean, you did it to Genghis Khan. It was like, it's like why we go to Vietnam. It was like the one country that beat the Mongols twice. That's who we're going to invade. This is insanity on steroids. And this is a Shia religion built on sacrifice. It believes in sacrifice. Its foundation is its sacrifice and martyrdom. So, I mean, that's why the Ayatollah was brilliant. I stay put, let him take me out. I got cancer, I'm going to die. And here I get to die one of the greatest martyrs in the history of my nation. So you combine Persian pride with Shia sacrifice. You knew that there was no chance they were ever going to give up. And Trump is just delusional. Trump convinces himself that in his mindset, I mean, people should ask themselves, why is Trump at different levels being unduly and unnecessarily antagonistic against his political promises, against three cultures at the same time? The civilization of China and its trade war, the civilization of Russia by continuing to propagate the Ukraine war and brag about our deep strikes into Russia at a time we really can't afford it on economic and oil and gas reasons, while continuing to escalate against Iran. That little meme of him being a Russian emperor is something he actually believes in. Regime change documented it. He said, look at all these leaders. And what leaders was he citing as examples? Genghis Khan and Attila the Hun. He'd even print it out. He goes, look at all the power they have. I got more power than them. He fancied himself the emperor from Caracas to Tehran, from Beijing to Moscow. That when you get that mindset, you deliberately take on the most powerful civilizations in the world. The Russians, the Chinese, and the Persians are the three civilizations that have withstood the longest set of attacks of any civilizations in our world. You would know, don't get in a land war with Russia. Don't try to bluff the Chinese. And don't try to conquer the Persians. And Trump is trying to do all three. There's no better evidence, the guys. Cuckoo.
So, okay, so where can we go? Because here's what we're at right now. I think you've just laid out a very compelling argument that there will be no military victory, period. No matter how much more we get, if Jack King gets everything he asked for, General Kellogg, General Spaulding, whatever, they all get all they want. Rupert Murdoch gets his way. We're going to run out of bullets. It's on the news right now. I think the CSIS had put something out to here a couple of days ago that talked about how long it would take to replace a lot of these things. An SM-3 missile takes 64 months. Even a Patriot takes, it turns out it's probably less than half, maybe a couple of years. But still, even if it's the lower end of that, to make one missile, meaning that we cannot replace what we're shooting here every single day and have been for weeks. We will literally run out if we try to do this again in 40 days of the key things. And then we're going to just be, I don't know, throwing rocks at them. Who knows what we're going to do, but we'll never defeat them. Now the Bab al-Mandab is allegedly shut down. The Strait of Hormuz definitely is shut down. Nothing's rolling. It just trickles is coming out of it. And the insufficient oil supply is continuing to compound on top of the helium, the fertilizers, the sulfurs, all the other kind of derivatives that are also blocked out of there. Where are we going if President Trump keeps trying to go military?
That's the problem. I mean, every day that this war continues in any kind of kinetic fashion without honoring some sort of diplomatic agreement like the Memorandum of Understanding and without just simply withdrawing from the region in the conflict is a day that it's a distraction from his other actually popular domestic agenda items like reforming elections with the SAVE Act. So he's losing political capital daily. He's losing political support daily just by what issues are not being discussed nationwide. Secondly, it's another day of a risk of casualties, of risk of injuries to U.S. personnel for a war Americans have never believed in. That's another day of diminishing political capital going into the tick-tock of the clock of the midterm elections. Then you've got the third component, which is that the economic impact and ramifications gets worse day by day by day, some of which may be to some degree irreversible. It may accelerate an AI bubble pop that could pop the stock market bubble that could in turn pop the consumer spending bubble, since half of consumer spending currently takes place by the top 10% who own all the stocks. And then on top of that, you have the oil and energy cost at the pump, which we're seeing show up in interest rates rising, which we can't afford with our debt reaching record levels, even higher than World War II as a percentage of GDP, exactly the opposite of what President Trump promised. So instead of sub $3 gas, you get over $4 gas. Instead of sub $4 diesel, you get over $5 diesel. Instead of affordable interest rates, you get the highest interest rate since the global financial crisis. Instead of reducing debt, you get a debt that is cannibalizing the budget on a regular basis. And all of this in an economic and political environment that's already hostile and adverse. And then we're just months away now from the general elections in November. And what happens if it's a wipeout in the House, wipeout in the Senate? Well, what does that mean? It means investigations into all the corruption allegations. It means impeachment inquiries up the wazoo. And what's going to protect him from getting convicted in the Senate when so many of the Republican would-be Brutuses in the Senate can't wait to stab him in the back anyway and anyhow? And then he's on the clock of being the first president ever removed from the White House. So that's the risk he faces every single day he lets this go on.
And what do you think the chances of, let's look at a black swan event. Who can say what the real chances of this are? You alluded to it earlier in this broadcast. I've heard it from several different sources now, not even just one or two, that it is possible that Iran may have been shoved into making a nuclear weapon, and we may just be shocked one day when there is this nuclear detonation in the middle of the Iranian desert somewhere, and they declare, like the North Koreans did at one point, we're now a nuclear weapon state, and then everything is radically changed from that. It seems to me there'll be the first attempt by the White House will be to say, see, I told you so. This is why we were doing this the whole time. But I think that enough people are going to say, no, there was no nuclear weapons program by your own assessment. In Tulsi Gabbard in 2025 and 2026, they still had not gone to do that. And now they've been forced into it. And now the very thing we were supposed to preserve, prevent, you have caused is there any chance that even with this Congress and Senate that he could be impeached if brought up on it?
I think it's unlikely he'd be removed at any time before changeover in elections, because so many Republicans, especially in the House, depend on some degree of Trump likability in the electorate amongst the Republican base to get out to vote, to salvage any chance of as many House seats as possible. So that's why he knows his risk is only with the post-January 2027 new House of Representatives and new Senate. That's when his risk really accumulates. And so he's got some freedom of action between now and then. The problem for him is that freedom of action is constrained by how what he does now could impact what that House and Senate looks like then, what public opinion looks like then. Because it's the combination of where he stands in public opinion come January 2027 and the nature of the House and the Senate and its partisan makeup that are going to determine how plausible their investigations are, how thorough and complete and detailed those investigations are, and how likely impeachment and removal become.
And it seems that there is a plausible case here that, I mean, number one, you can say you flat out violated the 1973 War Powers Act by taking the country fully to war without going to Congress first. It's right there. I mean, you know it better than anybody. Maybe you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think that he went to war completely against the Constitution and that War Powers Act, and there's room to take him up there. And then when you can, in the course of discovery, you can say, look, you were told by your intelligence community, you were told by your generals, this would never work, and yet you did it anyway. I mean, that seems to be a high crime and misdemeanor.
And not only that, the other problem is how many people jump ship. The problem with a cabinet of cowards is you end up with a lot of rats and would-be rats and eager rats who are never going to sacrifice their personal and political future for yours. And they will quickly turn the knife in. The irony is the person who's been the most critical of Trump inside the White House is the one who would be the most loyal. Vance is the one who would be the last to abandon and sabotage and betray and play Brutus. Everyone else that's been the docile sycophants are the ones that are the snakes that Trump has led inside the house. Mm. To, you know, refer to his old poem, The Snake. You knew who I was when I let you in.
Right. And that will come back to be played a lot in the future, I suspect.
Yes, indeed. And I think that's his risk. These are people that abandoned him in a heartbeat. Israel Lobby will sabotage him in a heartbeat. Rupert Murdoch will sabotage him in a heartbeat. The first leader to endorse and praise Joe Biden for winning the 2020 election was Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu of Israel. That's how quickly he was to stick that knife in. So that's who these people are. You know, you can't get in with a bunch of traitors and thieves and expect them to have any honor when the equation and the occasion calls for it. So I think that's one of his other problems is that if you notice, Rubio has played both sides of the fence throughout this whole thing, leaked one side and then said the opposite publicly or vice versa. And so you're going to continue to see that Ratcliffe the same way. They completely undermined his chance to challenge the 2020 election by saying it has something to do with China and Venezuela when that had nothing to do with what happened in 2020. What happened was old-fashioned ballot stuffing the old-fashioned way, good Democrats know how to do well. I grew up with some of them who explained how it worked. Even sabotage that part of his domestic political agenda, all for their war cause. And there's corruption scandals all over the place. There's a new one burgeoning with the Paramount Warner merger that's going to expose the Ellisons in the Israel lobby for trying to capture all of American media and cultural institutions or have a de facto monopoly over them, done through hiring lobbyists who did not register as lobbyists, who have tight ties throughout the Trump administration and literally monetized it for their personal self-enrichment that will implicate even Trump family members in the connections they have. So all of those scandals will be shocking, and the risk that the whole world discovers them quicker rather than later accumulates the longer this war continues, because it increases the risk he loses by big margins in the House and the Senate, which in turn create the removal and investigation risk.
You know, we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.